Off the Ball Rugby.
Conan's going to come in and there's a very good chance now starting for the Lions. Yes, he's an absolute talisman. He's been the most in-form number 8 for a good while now in the world.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball's Breakfast Bite. A bite-sized serving of Ireland's breakfast sports show.
Gavin Cooney, good morning to you. How are you?
Thanks. Oh, good. Yeah, all good.
People are complaining about the quality of the football that we witnessed last night.
I mean, it was terrible, but 16th against 17th in the Premier League, what do you kind of expect? And while it was, like, it was so bad. After a while, it did become kind of fascinatingly and compellingly bad. Like, how can a European final be this bad? And I felt it became a study of desperation. I mean, but, like, Spurs obviously so desperately wanted to win a trophy to end the old Spursy talk, etc. But United needed that trophy so badly for their future because, you know, like, this was one shot salvation that they absolutely didn't deserve but couldn't take it.
Just before the break, Arthur was making the point that ironically, from the new manager's perspective, assuming there is Ruben Amorim, that not having to juggle a squad that's patently not fit for two competitions, as we've seen, that actually being able to concentrate on the league next season might be somehow a blessing in disguise.
But without the money to replace the players.
And I'll just clarify that. I don't know if it'll be a good or bad thing. I just think it'll give him the clearest shot of showing whether he can or can't do it.
I think it'll be good for Manchester United fans in the sense that they'll have to watch less of this team next year. You know, this takes a good chunk of their midweek misery off. I think losing it is a disaster for them. I really do. And I know it may benefit from more time in the training ground, but this team has had time in the training ground to this point, and like, look how clueless they were in the last 10, 15 minutes of that game as they're chasing it. It's Harry Maguire up front. And you're like, is that the best you can come up with? And like, take a step back to consider the kind of absurdity of what we saw. So Amorim insists on playing this system for which his players are not suited. And the only way the system will work is when they clear out all those players and bring in new guys. And to be able to afford that in the immediate term, they had to win the Europa League. But they couldn't win the Europa League because the players don't suit the system and he won't change. It was a very, very, very bad night for him.
It's a commonly accepted currency that there'll be a mass clear out of players. But that assumes that there's going to be a market for a bunch of players who are, in some cases, too old, in some cases, too highly paid, and in some cases, not very good.
Yeah. Like, if you're, like, United will obviously want to sell Antony. They may sell Garnacho, may even say Mainoo. But if you're willing to buy them, you've got United over a barrel. Like, I mean, they need money so badly, you can just wait them out and drive the price down. You know, like, there's no good news for United out of this. And, you know, how much change can you affect in one single summer? And United have the added difficulty of being United, that it's so hard for them to sell their players because they're overpaid and because they're so comfortable there and on lengthy contracts. So there's just no really good news anywhere for United.
Like, you wouldn't be terribly surprised if there was one or two signings in the summer, but that the starting 11 at the start of the league next year looks very similar to the team that finished last night. You know, maybe two or three go, but you're not going to get rid of six, are you?
I don't think that's realistic to get rid of six, really, unless they're out of contract, and I don't think really anybody is. Like, it seems like Cunha's going to come in, so he'll be a good signing. He's kind of talk about Liam Delap, so maybe Delap will come in. He's kind of got a release clause and he seems relatively cheap. But aside from that, like, they'll sign one or two, but again, I don't see that whole revolution affected across the team, and they may have to sell some of the family silver in terms of Garnacho and Mainoo and
Bruno, you know, Fernandes.
There must be a question mark about Fernandes now. I mean, for how much longer is he going to stick around here in this failing team? He's obviously been given a pretty fat contract after, was it PSG were interested in him, United were like, we can't lose Bruno. But now there's talk with the Saudi league, and I know Bruno was saying last night that, you know, if it was about more money, I could leave. But it's about, you know, fighting for trophies and being in the top competitions. And United won't be doing that next year.
No, they definitely won't. So can we talk about the team selection last night? And did he pick the right team?
No. So Bruno's picked deep, which doesn't make sense to me because he's probably their best finisher. He's their best goal scorer. And the deeper he is, the less the less reward and more risk you get from his passing. I mean, the reason he's so good is because he plays progressive passes and takes a risk in possession. But you want to, the closer the opposition goal you have that, the more secure you are. And it was Bruno who gave the ball away. No, he gave it away repeatedly, especially in the first half, and he gave the ball away in the lead up to the goal that ultimately, the move that ultimately ended in the goal. I mean, Mason Mount did nothing. I don't really know why he brings. He was obviously a very important player for Thomas Tuchel back in, what, 4 or 5 years ago, but it's
even
very
if
hard to.
Swapped their positions last night. You know, Mount would have been tidy in possession, kept it, kept the ball moving back and forth, but Bruno would have been forward in the box,
yeah,
getting the ball.
Potentially. And I, like, Ugarte's on the bench. I always thought, like, I don't really know what. I guess Casemiro's a better, is much better on the ball than Ugarte, but, you know, Casemiro's slow, man. You know, like, his legs have gone.
This week on Diverted.
I mean, I woke up at like 11:30. I cracked a cold one with the boys. We had some buffalo chicken dip this afternoon.
It's the only way to do it. It's the only way to do it. It's the only way to do it in Gainesville, baby.
Yeah.
We are in the United States. We're talking college football, Hialeah in Miami, and we're talking pillow fighting.
It's still combat sports. The transition from bare knuckle to pillow fight is good because I'm also a Tai Chi instructor, so you know you got to go from hard to soft.
Diverted. Coming every Tuesday to your podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts.
We're turning our attention to hurling. I'm delighted to say Keith Rossiter, the Wexford hurling manager, is with us this morning. Keith, good morning to you. How are you getting on?
Hey, sir. All good, thank you. Yeah, nice spring morning. Nice spring morning, Wexford. All good.
Yeah, it's always sunny there, right?
Well, it's meant to be.
How are you reflecting on the season? Obviously, there's one game left, but it obviously doesn't have the same intensity around it in the build-up, and it doesn't have the same potential benefits, but from winning it this weekend, from your perspective. So what's your reflection so far on the season?
Yeah, I suppose the match this weekend is something different, something unique for ourselves, I suppose. It's last year we were competing against Kilkenny for a Leinster final spot, you know, with the view that if we competed well and won in the Leinster final, if we draw, we're in third place and we're in limbo then a little bit and we see what the other results were like. And, you know, that brought the bit of intensity to it, a bit of bite to it. And, you know, we finished third last year, and to be in the position this year, you know, it's unique. It's a weird feeling. But Wexford playing Kilkenny on a Sunday in Wexford Park brings its own sort of rivalry and intensity anyway, Jerry, you know. But I suppose the championship as a whole for ourselves, you know, it's been up and down. Good start against Antrim. You know, a couple of issues up in Parnell Park. That you'd probably want to talk about at some stage, but we had to get over that, and the Galway game was just, we were just very flat. Nice to get the win against Offaly and get a couple more points on the board, and look, the results didn't just work out for us in the end, but I think Leinster has been, you know, competitive. We knew it was going to be that way. You know, Galway, Dublin and Kilkenny are now safe. They're the three teams through, and you know, there'll be a match for anyone coming out of Munster as well, in fairness to them. And sure, the Munster Championship has been electric. Some great scores, you know. I think Limerick had scored, or we scored last weekend in 70 minutes. They scored in 35 minutes last weekend against Cork, you know, which no one probably would ever saw that. But I think it's been a good championship so far, and plenty of good hurling in it.
From that Wexford perspective, you're referring to, I think, the ghost goal that was given against you. You end up losing the game by 2 points. It was a penalty save. It's, you know, very difficult to save penalties at the moment, one-on-one scenario. You see it less and less. Like, this is a massive sliding doors moment in terms of the buzz and the electricity around Wexford Park this weekend, for example. So I know you have to get on, and talking about referees and linesmen and all that kind of stuff is not really what anybody wants to be doing, but it is such a sliding doors moment in your season.
No, it's massive. It's massive. You know, would we have beaten Dublin in the end? God only knows. It was always going to come down to the wire. You know, that's where we wanted it to go. But with that moment in play, it's just a 6 point swing. That's just mathematically the way it is. You know, to concede the penalty, we're probably in control of the ball at the time. It was a very poor penalty to concede. But in fairness to Marafanning, great save, great reflexes to get back up off the ground, pick it up and get it out of danger. And, you know, there's an awful lot of officials around you that, like, we can talk about VAR and different bits and pieces like that, but there was three men well positioned. There was a linesman fairly well positioned. I probably hadn't got the best view of the whole place, but I wasn't badly positioned either, and I could see that, you know, it was on the line. Did it cross the line from my side? I couldn't tell you at that stage, but I was in the restroom 30 seconds after, and there was video being sent to me, you know, with the ghost goal being clarified. And it's a massive momentum swinger in a game like that. It was always nip and tuck with us. Dublin got a great, you know, got a good lead, started off out of the blocks really well. Roy O'Connor took a really good goal. It was nip and tuck the whole way. To be up by 3 points after saving a penalty at that stage of the game, 50-odd minutes gone, you know, that can be very disheartening for the Dublin players and for the Dublin supporters. And it can give the Wexford players and the Wexford supporters a massive lift. The roar that came behind me out of the stand when Mark Fanning cleared the ball out over the sideline was unbelievable, you know. And then for a green flag to go up, look, I was puzzled. I didn't know what to do. I said to the linesman, he said it was a goal. As I said, he was a bit closer than me. But look, it's something's going to haunt us for a long time. Would we have beaten Dublin in the end up? God only knows, as I said. Dublin are a good side. Hurled for 35 minutes last weekend and, you know, really rattled Kilkenny. You know, so they're not a bad side either. So, but we knew it was going to come down probably to that game and the Galway game. Obviously enough, we wanted to be getting points out of one of them, and it just put an awful pressure on going to Sandhill 2 weeks later.
Listen to this morning's Off The Ball Breakfast in full. Become a member at offtheball.com/join now.